You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we have Ken Posner, the lighting designer for Broadway shows such as Wicked, Hairspray, Legally Blonde, Grease, Kinky Boots, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, War Paint, Finding Neverland, Mean Girls, Beetlejuice, and several other iconic Broadway shows. I've been obsessed with lighting and Ken's work for years, and I'm so excited to have him here today. Hi, Ken.
Hi, thanks for having me, Mason.
Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Really great.
Can you walk me through your path to working on over 50 Broadway shows, I think?
Sure. I guess the condensed version of that is I started doing community theater when I was around, helping out around backstage. My parents weren't involved, my mom especially, probably like 6 or 7. And then just developed a passion for storytelling and making theater. That sort of just evolved into a career. And I just pursued it through grade school and then high school and into college. And then from college into summer stock theater. And from summer stock, I moved into New York City and just sort of built a career based out of New York, but a lot of work in regional theaters around the country and opera, a little bit of dance. Sort of one thing led to another, and kind of here I am.
So from the first production meeting for these shows to opening night, what's your process of getting together a design, getting together a plot, and then programming? What's your process for all of that?
It varies from project to project. I don't have a particular style. I really let the director and the other member of the creative team sort of drive that. But I can be hired to do a project anywhere from 18 months to 2 years out, up until a few weeks out, depending on the scale and scope of the project. But my favorite part about what we do is the collaboration, is working with other people to create theater, to make, tell a story, to engage an audience, to celebrate, whatever it is. That's what drives me. That's my passion.
You were talking about getting started on shows and how people ask you to do stuff. Is that how it works now? Or did you start out sending out resumes and now you've gotten enough shows under your belt to get asked to do stuff?
The answer is yes to that. I think it really depends. Certainly earlier on in my career, I was sort of building a name for myself. And it was really a combination of, my career is really built out of doing summer stock theater. I made so many great contacts and friends in those 4 or 5 years that I was really immersed in summer stock. And I continue to do it way after that. But really sort of the notion of doing 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 shows in an 8 or 10 week period of time was thrilling and a huge part of my education and a huge part of, developing professional and personal relationships that have lasted, 35 years. And I wouldn't trade those days for anything. And I worked at some great theaters, Williamstown Theater Festival for a year as an intern, and then almost nearly 10 years at the Berkshire Theater Festival in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, which I think now called Berkshire Theater Group, but that's kind of my foundation. So it was sort of building those contacts, meeting people, You know, one of my oldest friends in the business is Michael Greif, the director of Dear Evan Hansen and Rent. Two shows I didn't design, by the way, but he's one of my oldest friends. And we met at the Berkshire Theater Festival, Unicorn Theater, in maybe 1988. And, you know, one of my key projects for both of us in terms of just launching our career was a play that we did at Naked Angels called Mock and All, that then moved to the Public Theater and got a lot of recognition that season. And kind of that project kind of launched both of our careers. And that's just, you know, one example of many, many of my, like I said, collaborators, friends that I've known over the years. So once you sort of build almost like a little network or a group of people, you know, artists that you work with, it's just, you know, it grows exponentially.
Yeah. So working on shows such as like Wicked and Beetlejuice, you're working with like projection designers. How do you go about weaving in and out of not overpowering them, but also not making it stand out too much?
How does that work?
You know, that's a great question. Just in terms of how do light and projection blend? And because, you know, projection basically is a light driven source of, you know, medium, you know, how does that collaboration occur? And I know I've been very, very fortunate to work with really talented and gifted projection designers, Peter Negrini being one of them, Lee McCarthy being one of them. Also, she did Wicked. Obviously, that technology has just exploded in the last 20 years. But Peter Negrini in particular, and many, many others, but Peter is also a lighting designer. So there's a sensitivity and a mutual respect that we both had for each other. And we were really up for on Beetlejuice, for example, we were really attached at the hip, you know. And if you look at the lighting versus the projection or video for Beetlejuice, unless you have a really discerning eye, and a lot of times it's hard to tell which is which, and that's the way it should be. But it just keys back to the fact that I just love the collaborative part of what we do. And, you know, Peter is a brilliant designer and a brilliant dramaturg, and it's just always amazing to be in the room with him. He just makes me a better lighting designer.
This is a very technical question that some people might not understand. But in Wicked, I know it's not like a normal board that you might see on Broadway. It's a Grand MA, right?
Yes.
So
on the Broadway on the Broadway company, yes.
Yeah. How do you go through choosing your equipment and what suits a show better than maybe the standard on Broadway?
Well, in terms of the Grand MA specifically, I tended to defer to the moving light programmer on their console of choice. It's like, you know, a musician choosing an instrument. And at that in that period of time in the early 2000s, shows were still on two, and in the case of Wicked, three desks. So there was a conventional lighting desk, there was a desk for moving lights, and then there was another desk for the projection video component for Wicked. And over the years, the moving light console was the Grand MA1. That's what Warren Flynn chose to program the show. I was fine with that. And the conventional desk was ETC Obsession. And I don't know I don't remember what the video was on, to tell you the truth. It might have also been the Grand MA. Anyway, over the years, those consoles became obsolete. Technology improved. We upgraded the consoles in New York to the Grand MA 2, and all those things just merged into one desk. And the reason that things were on three desks at that point was available memory, speed of programming. Those are basically the primary reasons. And now the technology has evolved. All of that data, all that information can be sit inside one console because of the, you know, improvements and evolution of the technology.
On top of the programming aspect of it, how do you know what lights to put in the plot, and how do you know what's going to suit your design?
Well, I'm an artist, so if you give me a light, I'll make a picture with it. In terms of choosing equipment, it's driven by a lot of different things. You know, the specific needs of a specific show, space. availability in terms of equipment availability in lighting shops, you know, budgetary concerns. Those were all factors in deciding and choosing lighting equipment. And there's a lot of lighting equipment out there now. There's much more now than there was 20 years ago, many more options. But at the end of the day, as an artist, you can kind of make it all work. Do I have preferences? Yes. Do I? There are other certain things in my toolboxes because I like one fixture's color versus one fixture's ability to move in a specific way or do specific shutter cuts or have, you know, extra room for more pattern lighting patterns, whatever it might be. Again, it's really about picking the right tool for that suits the piece that you're lighting.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
So a lot of your shows went out on tour. So how big of a role do you play in transcribing the lighting plot to be able to be transported around the United States and around the globe?
I'm very important. I'm very attached. I'm actually heading down to Dallas next week for the relaunch of Wicked. I'll be opening in Dallas after this 18-month hiatus because of COVID. So I just returned from London, where we relit and remounted the West End production of Hairspray that just opened a few weeks ago in London, which, by the way, the audience went crazy for. It was just so thrilling to be back in the theater. And to revisit that show, it's one of my favorite all-time projects, for sure. And also, while I was in London, we moved Pretty Woman from the Piccadilly to the Savoy. That's a show that I co-designed with a dear friend and colleague, Philip Rosenberg. We designed it together. So, you know, very, very, very committed and attached to additional companies. And it's fun to take something that you've done at a very large scale and then make it portable and make, you know, try to bring, I mean, the goal is to bring the Broadway experience to as many people as you possibly can. So that's the kind of the job.
How much changes in those instances?
It really depends on scale and scope. You know, a very large scale tour such as a Wicked is many, many, many trucks. I think the first national when it first came out, which is not what's on the road right now, it's a pared down version of that, was I think 20 trucks, nearly 20 trucks, 17, and then three show to show. Meaning we did jumps of certain equipment just to make the time, get the show into the theater in time. Wicked comes down on a Sunday matinee and then can do a performance on Wednesday evening in its first week. So that those parameters are very tightly set, and the scenery and is very cleverly engineered to fit in trucks that way, as is the lighting, as is the sound. You know, the costumes are carefully packaged. We travel everything city to city. So that's why it's so many trucks. And it's very organized, choreographed event to load in or load out a show of that scale. Now, having said that, that's sort of at the larger end of the scale, like a Lion King Wicked sort of scale. Smaller scale tours, it could be four or five or six trucks, which means that scenery that used to be hard is probably soft. There are probably fewer lights, much smaller front of house lighting package. You would use local follow spots. You wouldn't troop your own, for example, things like that.
So you mentioned the summer stock being part of your education. Other than that, what's your educational path to where you are, and how much did education play a role in where you are now?
Certainly very, very important. And I'm a graduate of SUNY at Purchase, which is part of the state university system of New York. And I had some great teachers there, including Billy Mincer, my mentor, Brian McDevitt was a teacher of mine. And the proximity to New York was fantastic because we had that, we could pull from that community. So a lot of guest artists came to teach at that point. And we were also able to do a little work. We weren't allowed to, but we could, you know, you could escape on a weekend and go, you know, focus a show off Broadway or help hang a show off Broadway. So there was always that kind of, you know, proximity to New York was really helpful for me. I don't have a master's degree. I just came, I came out of SUNY Purchase with the BFA and just kind of went right to work. I was able to get into the United Scenic Artists internship program for lighting design, which doesn't exist anymore. It has kind of come and gone over the years, but that's how I got into the United Scenic Artists, which is the union for designers, the local for designers. You know, again, it was just about, you know, building those networks, the alum from Purchase and, you know, just, you know, immersing in the community.
What's the best advice you got from that education or shows that you've done in the past that you would want to pass down to future light and designers or just designers that want to work in theater?
Yeah, I think my advice is follow your passion. There are many, many, many different occupations or vocation within the lighting design world. So, you know, I happen to be a theatrical lighting designer, but there you can do architectural lighting, you can light trade shows, you can light fashion shows, you can do architectural lighting, themed entertainment, lighting on cruise ships. There's just the occupation has expanded so much and grown so much in 30 years that and there's so many ways to be a lighting artist. It doesn't necessarily have to be theater. So just follow your passion. And if you look at how clever and detailed the lighting is, for instance, in video games, or you know, if you're interested in making content, you know, ultimately that's what, as a theatrical designer, that's what I do. I make content in three dimensions, but you can also be an animator and make content. So I would just say be tenacious, follow your passion, and insert yourself into the environment that you ultimately think you want to be in or work in. Even if you learn ultimately that, oh, this isn't what I want to do, that's still great. Then you can move to the next idea.
So the past year and a half has been crazy, to say the least. So how have you taken that time to like work on shows, and what have you been doing during the past year and a half to work on shows?
Well, it's tricky. Not a lot of work on shows, actually. It picked up in the last few months for sure, probably after the new year. I had a lot of things in the pipeline. Things kept being postponed, kind of false starts. You know the story. But really reading a lot, looking at light a lot, listening to music, doing interviews like this, for example, really sort of helping, doing a lot of Zoom teaching or Zoom guests appearances, lecturing, however you want to phrase it, mentoring, things of that nature.
And with that, I'm sure that you are ready to be back in a theater, but other than being back in a room and back to designing, what are you looking forward to as the world reopens?
Just rejoining the community and getting back in the room and being creative and making theater again. And also very interested in the next generation and helping them, follow their dreams and enter this fantastic vocation, this great world that I happen to be so fortunate to be in.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up this episode?
I don't think so. If you have any more questions, shoot them out. Otherwise, thank you for this opportunity, and I'm really happy that you reached out and honored to be in this amazing group of artists that you've already interviewed. Very impressive.
Well, thank you so much for saying that, and thank you so much for being here.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUPS. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, SUPS celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching.
Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.